And good afternoon. It is just turned 4 o'clock, yeah. And thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located here in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. This is Finding a Voice, a spoken word program airing here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And coming up on the show today, in the first hour from February 25th, Novel Idea Bookstore Soiree, you'll hear poetry readings by Ann Archer with her latest book, Prompted, and Calista Markotic with her selected work. And you'll also hear acoustic music by a duo called Shenanigans, and that is Ann and John McClurg. And I believe there were some John McClurg solo performances as well. In the second hour, again at Novel Idea Bookstore, a month and a day later, March 26th, you'll hear an event put together by creative writing students at Queen's University. The event called Queen's Novel Idea Open Mic was emceed by PhD candidates in the Department of English, Sophie Bean and Dana Peterson-DeProse. Those who were reading that evening were Sam Frazier, Denbe Whitmarsh, Dana Peterson DeProse, and Glenn Wilmot. Just my usual start of the hour announcement is that occasionally some poetry, spoken word, or music played on this show may contain strong language. I try to preserve it when I can, but I do have to edit some out from time to time. But I do hope to honor the creative integrity of both the author and the piece. It's going to be a tight first hour here. Let's go ahead and move into the first event. Two Novel Idea events. This one from recorded February 25th. Again, in case you tuned in a few seconds late, poetry readings by Ann Archer with her latest book, Prompted, and Calista Markotic with selected work, and then you'll hear acoustic music by a duo called Shenanigans, which consists of Ann Archer and John McClurg, and then a bit of solo work by him as well. Let's go ahead and just jump right in. Here you go.
Good evening, everyone. I think we'd better start before I finish my wine. Thank you all for coming on such a shitty night. It's just a delight to be here in front of you. Many of you here, in fact, I'd say most of you, know Kali Markotic as an award-winning poet and contributing editor at ARC magazine. You know that her debut volume of poems, with its stunning cover, which I guess the cover was done by your, well, the image was done by your granddaughter Charlotte, I believe.
Yes, it was. And she's right there.
Not to, you know, put the spotlight on you, but thank you. It's a gorgeous cover. Well done. Wrap in a Big White Towel was a finalist for the Gerald Lampert First Book Award. You might also know that Kali is beginning the submission process, what fun, for her new manuscript, Sail Past, and for her chapbook, Edward. You probably don't know, however, that Kali has a secret, obsessive love for the moon. As a girl, she memorized all the names of all its phases and would trot them out frequently in front of her siblings, who would, and this is really surprising, they would roll their eyes and mock her erudition. She has a similar and abiding love for birds and their proper names, a fascination which informs her poem, Immortal Birds. Immortal birds. 50-something years ago, near Grafton, we passed a sandbank maybe 20 meters high. Near its grassy cornice, in and out of oval doorways, swallows looped in reckless plunges, yet were sure and in control. I, in the crucible of early pregnancy, was crashing. Cranky, out of sorts, in our first marriage home in South Ontario. Homesick for my mother, dad, and little sister Jane. Those swallows made a fretwork of the lonely sky, punched holes in my malaise in the instant it took to pass in 1960s traffic flow. My young husband drove the distance earnestly. For all I know, he might have wished to leave me there. Bank swallows have unforked tails, distinct from their cousins of the barn. Who taught me that? My son, that tiny embryo, a full-grown man, who studies birds. My parents dead. My sister Jane past middle age, and I am of a certain age. Those swallows, though, go on and on, looping in and out, immortal, recklessly.
And we just have some fun learning some things about each other that others might not know. So here is something about Anne. When Anne was young, she wanted to be a paperboy.
Mm-hmm.
And that alter ego, she wanted to be called Dwayne. Dwayne. And in her, I found in her book, she didn't tell me this part, but in her book, in a poem called From the Suburbs, there's a little bit of explanation about that. It says, by age 7, I knew I wanted to be a paper boy. Barred by gender, I begged our local deliverer, told him he could call me Dwayne. Dwayne, a name that falls with a thud or a bad joke, a name with a country twang, unusual for the suburbs. Also, another thing, and this is impressive. We've just had a week of Olympics, and we've seen a lot of Canadian speed skaters. Well, you might know by Anne's energy and her body type, she grew up in Winnipeg, and was a record-holding Canadian champion speed skater. She skated long track, and loved outdoor training. Loved the outdoor training ovals that they had. And I think you should think about that, because this was Winnipeg. She said that dream peaked at 14, puberty. She said that is when she discovered boys. And in the spirit of honesty, she said it would have been nice to have that go the other way. Her dreams changed then, and she took up the flute and began to write poetry and song lyrics. Her biggest number was a late 60s hit, You Look Like a Hearse. She claims her songwriting period was short-lived, but she still is a wonderful flautist and poet. Prompted is Anne's fourth book of poetry. It has been nominated for the Eric Hoffer Award, which is an international prize honoring outstanding writing and the independent spirit of small publishers. Her current project is a chapbook in process, a chronicle of the months leading to and following her husband's open heart surgery, and is called Sweet Heart. Anne and Montreal poet Marisa Gaceza have collaborated on a book of poetry inspired by the Canadian composer Anne Southam. That collaboration is called Sweet River, and it is looking for a home now. Anne emphasizes that she herself is not looking for a home. She plays in various duos with a handful of Kingston's finest musicians, such as John McClurg, and we'll be hearing them play tonight. But here's Anne in one of her poems, anticipating something we all anticipate, I think, spring, and it's called The Birds of the Pandemic. The birds return in shifts, robins first, intrepid scouts, crows who crowdsource, blackbirds thick in the conifers, the geese who sense a change in the air, alter their flight path, keep a distance, and that unknown bird who fills twilight with, you girl, you girl, you pretty, pretty girl. I wish I could whistle that in. The trees wake like sleepers from a dream of plenty, the forest on edge, wary of change, even as snow gives way to water pooling in the hollows between pine and spruce, brown needles and green fans of cedar and juniper fill the air with a tang and a sigh, a memory of something found, then lost. The cats eye us with disinterest, as usual, preen themselves and pester to be let out, not to prowl in meadow or wood, but to linger, to pounce and twitch and shimmy in the sun that, against all odds, strikes the south-facing porch solely for their delight a few minutes earlier each day.
Thank you, Callie. This is my friend John. John is revered and loved wherever he performs, whether it's here in Kingston or the Maritimes or Newfoundland. A friend of mine once went up to him and said, John, you're the real McCoy. But I prefer to think of him as the real McClurg. We're going to play Green Grow the Rashes. This is one of Robbie Burns's earliest poems. And after, I'm going to read a poem / song inspired by Green Grow the Rashes called Robbie's Rushes.
My arms around my dearie.
Robbie's rushes, green against blue. What is the name of that soft hue that the wind delights in painting? Wind in the rushes, creating beyond shape or form something new. Robbie's rushes, bending the breeze, artist and subject both. A tease to the eye and heart and the mind. Searching for what it wants to find in water, sand, and sky to ease or to echo what the wind whispers. The grass that curves and sways. Be like the wave that crests, breaks, and crests again. The wave in the mind rests, then tumbles in time, eternally. But the wave in the mind is a dance out of time and tune. The distance between us, between thought and deed. Between Robbie and his dearies, heedless for every hour that passes, lasses among the rushes, green against blue. Robbie's rushes, green against blue. Robbie's rushes, green against blue.
So I'm going to read from this book, and actually the artist there, I asked her what she thought I should read, and she suggested I read this one, so this is the one I'm going to start with. It's called Talking with Jol, and Jol was my sister. She died maybe 12 years ago, and it was after she died that I really began to write poetry because I think it brings you deep, and that's where I was at the time. So this is called Talking with Jol. If Dad asked, you'd play Moonlight Sonata for him, lofting him to peaks of pride, Beethoven's chords under your hands, sounding the depth and breadth of him, wall to wall, floor to ceiling, big, resounding love. How we basked in that. Remember? Remember when we buried Dad? Our stoic brother John slid from his trunk a folding chair, flipped it open on the grass, and bade Mum sit, that major domo style he had, while we sang Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, Dad's hymn, the metal of his bass conspicuously absent. Your rich alto carried it, your eyes fixed on the verse Mum chose and had chiseled on Dad's stone, Whither thou goest, I will go. And when, in time, she did, John wept, his cool busted once and for all, along with us three girls. And Joll, while you fought your fierce, brief battle to live, how I longed for Mum and Dad, wished they were here to say by magic you would be okay. After your MRI, you laughed and told me in that noise-filled tube you talked to Mum. You didn't tell me what she said.
This is a song that John wrote, and it's called Someone Thinks of You. Indeed.
Listen here, and hopefully we don't remember it's in there.
What is it?
It's one of the pick that I got.
Thank you.
That was Someone Thinks of You by John. Well, I still think of my student, Darius. He was, well, he still is, a young, delightfully neurodivergent musician. I taught him for about 5 years in person, and then when the pandemic hit, we turned to Zoom. And this is a poem that I wrote about teaching Darius, that's not his real name, by the way, teaching Darius on Zoom. Admit Darius. Good morning, Ann Archer, how are you today? Darius leans into the camera, erupts into our room, that space beyond the screen. His words zoom, slide, slur, collide, tumble like notes, tones and semitones, colors to finger and tongue. D major, all gold and sunshine. The piazza in Florence, where he ate crostata with his mother and sister. Stalked pigeons while Sofia talked con passione about her boyfriend, her new job. Or C, green as home, deep green, Dobruja green, the Carpathians in May. Folk tunes, Darius teaches me, turning the tables, improvisando. He watches me fumble and trip on the dotted eights, his arms and legs jigging at this absurdity, our joke. So baroque, he is master of the minuets in G, loves the 1, 2, 3, 4 and of a bray. Is Jethro Tull tilting the E minor, knows by heart Anna Magdalena's notebook. Bach's high-stepping suites, all taps and trills and show. Sees pattern everywhere, except for the slow, unpredictable adagios. Deaf to the call of a rallentando, or a melody that stretches and curls rubato, a cat on the couch. He plays Pokemon among the notes and rests, hides in plain sight, peekaboo, upside down on the fourth line of the staff. Ugh, Darius, you scamp, you sly, silly lad. End meeting for all.
Well, having begun on the story of my sister, I thought I would continue a little bit. At the opposite corner of this street, there it was a restaurant called Windmills. It's not Windmills anymore. It's the Union Kitchen now, but it still has a plate glass window, which figures into this poem, because it was a brunch in the middle of October with some friends when we first learned of her situation. So I'm going to read you Windmills 1, and then I'll read you Windmills 2. Windmills 1. Bewitched by October, excited for the brunch, I miss the drive-by omens. Vines make a dying offer, orange orbs to slice out faces which will leer for Halloween. Earth's breath is wan above the creek. Sumacs, the color of blood. At Battersea Encounter, furling leaves flame out my windshield, and for an instant, I am blind. Windmills Cafe. I hug my friends. We shrug off jackets, order our breakfast, and a text stings through. It's Joel. I'll call you at 10. Sanguine, I slip outside to take her call, lean on the plate glass window, and cool creeps through my blouse. I look at the sky, a blue that I, however good, can never deserve. Joel says hello, and I say hi, and I watch a girl just down the street fix a bandana, red, on her dog, a lab, while in my ear Jaws' voice says, "Melanoma." And I turn and feel the sun's faint warmth upon my back and up the street. Two college boys laughing rush to catch the light, and Jaw says, "Lungs, brain, maybe bone." And I look across the street as if, well, what can I say of the rest? I go inside. The food is served. Eggs Benedict, smoked salmon, my friend's dear face is smiling, readying a mimosa toast, and someone says, "How's Joel?" As I take my empty chair, and I can't think what to say. And windmills, too. Which, this whole book isn't about this, but this happens to be the last poem in this book. Windmills, too. Say you have a pearl. Feel is satin luster, its looks weight. Or an emerald, rainforest deep. Or an aquamarine, dazzling as a Bahamian sea. Any jewel, really. Say you have it on a chain, magnificent. You want the world to see it pendant between your breasts. It rules your posture, straightens you, pulls you upright. Now instead, say it is a magnet pulling you to windmills. Not the windmills of Wolf Island, rendered by artists in our town, blades gleaming, tines of ebony fretwork across Lake Ontario. No, to Windmills Cafe, its plate glass window where brunchers curve over lox and bagels, huevos rancheros. Wait, this magnet, did I say, is powerful. More than an urge to tappity-tap down Princess Street from the Grand Theatre or up the street from Harper's Burger Bar, this magnet at your breast governs solar plexus, torso, gut, where vital organs rise and fall, thrum and grind. You are being pulled by the heart, your whole self, a monolith of longing to be there. That's what it's like for me. I want to lean against the cool plate glass of windmills. I want my phone to ring. I want my sister's voice to tell me about her choir, her cat, her new red coat.
It's hard to know what to say after that poem, and what I had chosen is not really the right one, but pilchards. Pilchards. Who amongst us likes pilchards? I'm not seeing any hands. No, I don't. I was in Cornwall a couple of years ago, Cornwall, England, that is. I was on a hike. We hiked for 5 days on the Southwest Coast Path, and it was absolutely glorious. And we found out a fair bit about Cornwall when we were there. And Cornwall, in the from the mid, 18th century to the end of the 19th century, depended on pilchards or sardines, and on tin for a livelihood. This is a poem called Pilchards. And it starts with a Cornish saying, "Food, money, light, all in one night." Hewers spot the shoals first. Purple, brown, red, oily patches troubling the inshore water. Their cries, "Heva, heva!" lost in the wind and the racket. Hundreds of gulls, gannets, terns, shearwaters, slicing air thick with salt. Flags, like white sheets on wash day, toss the news, as men ready seine nets. Wives light ovens for tasan heva. I make my husband open the tin of sardines outside. Yet still the smell lingers in the air, a memory. My father's Saturday lunch, sardines on toast, flesh and bones lightly mashed with pepper. The tin slick with oil, the key to roll the metal back, exposing a pool of tiny, perfect fish, too hard for a child's fingers. My mother would rinse the tin after, then double wrap before stowing it outside with the morning's coffee grounds. Flies swarming our trash can like seabirds. And this is a little jig that I wrote called Have a Cake. Have a Cake is really good, by the way. I mentioned Have a Cake. Oh, and Meg made it. You made it once.
I actually made it after you read that poem. I went and looked it up. It's so good.
Isn't it good? It's a simple cake.
I need to make it again.
Did you use currants or raisins? Do you remember?
Currants.
So currants, flour, shortening, eggs, sugar. That's about it. And it really, I'm glad you found it delicious. Well, this is Have a Cake.
These two poems are from the manuscript Edward, that is a chapbook that's actually out there seeking a home right now. So the first one is called Sail Past, and it's local too. It took place right down here at the yacht club where, well, you'll hear the poem. Sail Past. Son of my son, you offer your young back to water, hike your slight weight port side to right the sail, and the mast tip draws a slow arc into July's sheer ether. From a deck chair on the wharf, I see the dark drench of your shirt beneath your orange vest. Your wet hair slaps your forehead as you swing up from the rail. Sky-eyed boy, you clenched my heart with baby fist 10 years ago and never loosed it back to me. I know what pain may come to those who love a sailor. When you were 6, the captain of the ferry to Wolf Island placed your small square hands upon the wheel. The great engine pounded you like a pulse, A ship's wheel turned your dreams. No costume would do but a captain's white that year on Halloween. The sailing coach is shouting instructions from his zodiac. In years which will melt like wisps of cirrus in the blue, there will be no coach, no zodiac. And you, a mariner alone on these inland seas. I am the daughter of a captain's daughter. Surprised that in these 100 years and more, no boy in our family bore the name Edward. And this is the second poem in the manuscript. Edward and the Great Lake Storm of 1913, which did happen. His wife Amanda breathes on the window's hoarfrost cake and clears a peephole round as a pirate's eye patch and blinks outside into a goblin frenzied dance of sleet and snow. She might as well be blind. His brother Agar's voice, over the shrieking wind, over the rattle and crash the storm has loosed, is saying, Edward will make safe harbor. Edward knows Lake Huron like the back of his hand, is saying Edward, Edward, as if Edward's name makes Edward live. Lithe, limbed, lively Edward, laughing, alive. The kitchen's doubtful lamplight quavers. The racket and slam of the maelstrom belies Agar's merciful, false ebullience. In Amanda's cooling eye, the blizzard whip patch jigs its denial. And out on the lake, the towering crests topple and pitch his ship like a pickup stick and tumble his crew like jacks. Upstairs, his children toss in sleep. The storm's banshee sibilates their dreams. Sweet Aileen, not yet two, and little Amy, fierce with love, and Kenneth, good son, good brother. Sometime this night, they cease to have a papa.
Thank you. That was called Marching with Bears. I live in the country, and I live on a dirt road, and I do a lot of walking, and I do see the occasional bear on the road. I see many things on that road. I see birds. I see some neighbors, and I also see some dogs. And this next poem is about an encounter that I had with a dog. After the encounter, well, maybe before the encounter, I had been reading Frank Sonnets, a fabulous book of poetry by the American poet Diane Seuss. It's an autobiography in I don't know how many sonnets there are in the book, but it's an autobiography in sonnets. So this is called On Reading Frank Sonnets. Poems sharp-toothed as the pit bull that opened me up last August. So sudden the attack. There was no before or after, just lunge, and blood, but little pain. Its absence as shocking as a maw of teeth making a bracelet of bites. Missing tendons and veins by a gasp. Even the dog got ahead of itself and let go too soon. Did the owner yell, stop, or down, or roll over? And over and over. I only recall that he said, I am so, so, so sorry, as I staggered the 100 yards home. Something red winding its way like a ribbon down forearm to wrist to dirt road.
Wow. That's terrible. And this poem is the last one in my chapbook, Edward. It's the whole story has been told by this. It's called After All. It's also true. In 1986, an American dive team sees, deep in sediment, a curve not made by nature, Regina's Bell. If divers could dance in glee, they would. The fractured hull hunkered upside down 13 fathoms under Huron's glittering face. If the fatal crack could open and speak, she would tell a tale of loneliness. In 1914, her gallant ghost, Edward, slipped away when winter unhanded the water. Now, 1986, and Amy gone, and Kenneth died while still a boy, Aileen, my mother, was featured in a TV doc about the find. Was Edward a hero? The host posed the question. I watched my graceful mother from my place beyond the camera. Her generation coped with World War I, the Spanish flu, the Great Depression, and World War II. I remember her straight gray gaze, the tilt of her chin, her dignity. Well, she said, a captain's duty was to steward his ship and lead his crew, and that is what my father did. The quiet warmth of her. She didn't need to say he was a hero. Amy and Aileen named their boys Jack and Joe and Ken and Jim and John. My cousins and siblings and I had boys, another John, a Chris, a Dan, and Brian, and Robert, another Jim, another David, Mark. When the sun falls, when it's time to come in from play, there's no Edward to call home. No boy in our family called Edward.
I pulled out the wrong book. I was just about to read. one of my favorite poems from Rap in a Big White Towel. But perhaps I'd better read one from my book. We each have one poem left. And this is the last poem in my book called Prompted. The rock says, "Trace my ribs under the pelt of cord grass, switch grass, clover, wild strawberries, purple vetch. I'm a direction, broken and seamed. A path of resistance, least resistance. Follow."
My last poem is one of the more recent poems that I've written. I think I gave you all poems that are true tonight, and this one is also true. My husband is an only son, an only boy, and his mother had one sister who didn't marry, had no children. So as those two people became older, he was it. He was their one blood relative, which sort of meant I was it too, actually. But they were not young people. This is not a tragic poem, but they both have died now, and his aunt died just before Christmas. And then around Christmas time, we also had a little gathering. It was actually for my daughter Melissa's birthday. And this poem was inspired by something that happened that night, and it's called Death and Taxes. Yes, good wool wicks, yet beneath Ben Franklin's soaked frock coat, his flesh is cadaver frigid. Oh, he may not die of chill tonight, but he will die. Whereas the capricious raindrop pendant from his nose naysays the certainty of lightning striking the antenna on the jigging kite above in the thunderous sky. It isn't one of life's two certainties. And tonight, Dawn and I sit arm and arm, arm to arm, and Jane's Alex orders death and taxes. The bitters cuddle in the Scotch's stout heart, and we all raise our sparkling glasses to the simulated firmament of lit star-dusted indigo, and the other death and taxes, dry, non-gustatory ghost words loom aloof, reminding us we're tired. Mm-hmm. And Dawn's aunt has died, and next it's her financials, dripping duty like a drenched kite string, and we're on the front lines now. Mm-hmm. We say, good night, kids. Good night, kids. We do not say goodbye. We pay the tab and link arms and traverse the slippery lot. We hold each other up by sleeve and elbow and lust for the yawn of our wide white bed, and we lie down side by side and hold each other's hand. So long as no one comes and lays a lily on our chest, the zest of morning coffee will let us know another day is ours. Tonight it came quickly, death and taxes, in the glitter of cut glass, a dark topaz glow, the strong certainty of Scotch, a bloom of bitters surely in its depth.
Scotch. Well, good night, kids. Thank you so much for coming out on this rather wretched evening. Bruce, thank you for recording. Oscar and Joanna, you're behind the shelves. Thank you for hosting. And thank you for the goodies. Joanna, as you know, is known for her goodies. Oh, there you are, Joanna. You're right back. I don't have my glasses on, so you know.
You're giving up on contact lenses.
Oh, enough abrasions for one lifetime. John, thank you for playing with me. We will pipe you out with an Irish tune. Oh, it's a heartbreaker. It's a heartbreaker. It's one of those Irish love tunes. Well, it's Irish. It ends badly. She moved through the fair.
Just heard from a February 25th Novel Idea Bookstore soiree, poetry readings by Ann Archer and Callista Markotich, and then music by Ann Archer and John McClurg as Shenanigans, but I believe also some individual pieces as well. It is quickly approaching 5 o'clock.